Coming up, Thunder Twins activate. The Brooklyn Nets narrowly escape at home, getting the win over the Houston Rockets at a critical moment when we look inside those Eastern Conference playoffs. We break down the final 5 minutes of this one that really told the tale, why it doesn't matter if you struggle for 3.5 quarters against Houston, and how this really helps solidify the Brooklyn Nets position in the sixth seed.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brooklyn. Yo. Yes, my friends. It is the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. Over there, you're going to find Doug Norrie. He's the owner-operator of DFSR for all your daily fantasy sports rankings from DraftKings to FanDuel. He's got you covered. I'm Adam Armbrick, breaking down the New York Football Giants on the One Giant podcast and your New Jersey Devils on the Devils Puck Luck podcast. We thank you for making us your first listen of the day, free on all those great platforms. And Doug, I'm not scared. You are, as the Brooklyn Nets get the win at home, 123-114, over, quite frankly, the lowly Houston Rockets.
Yeah, they made us sweat it out basically till the end. You always want to just maybe take it a little easier on a Wednesday night to know that just the game could be in hand against a, what should be a very inferior opponent. But who cares, man? W's or W's. And at this point, you and I have sort of set our own, I think, rooting interests along what we think the Nets' motivations are. I know there's people out there that want the Nets to do a variety of different things when it comes to the end of the season. It's clear they want to make the playoffs. It's clear they want to avoid the play-in. So therefore, I've aligned my rooting interest with what they want. And this is what you want, man. It was a W. There's a lot of other things that kind of went right for them also tonight. A lot of things that went right for them down the stretch. Really exciting game. And I'll say, before we get into some of the sequences, I did my most silent fist pumping.
Here we go.
And also, at least two times, arms out to my sides on some of these threes and then into the fist pump for when they hit some of these shots, when they hit the shots late. Yeah, it was exactly. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see what Adam just did. I wasn't fully counting all of them for myself, but I know that I'm pretty sure this was the most I've ever done in a game this season for the Nets. And that's where you could tell my energy level was.
That's where it should be, man. You said it there at the top. Whatever you think the Nets should be doing, we know what their goal is. They want this team to win basketball games. They want to feel like this core, that a lot of these members are going to be a part of this team going forward. You want to get some good vibes around it. And I'll be frank with you, man, as we talk about these closing sequences, when all of the big shots were going down for Brooklyn, the bench was reacting positively, as in, hey, a little fist bump, a little, yeah, that's right. We get those looks from the corner. But there were not over elated reactions from the team. I think because when you come into a game against the Houston Rockets, who I kept going back to try to figure out, had they had a run where they'd won a couple of games, I stopped when it was they had won six of their last 28. I figured, all right, it's probably good enough to assume they never had a streak like that. And I think the Brooklyn Nets know that, right? The record is now, what, 9-15 since the trade deadline. We understand they haven't performed as well as we may have liked them to. But they look at themselves in that locker room as being a better team, a more experienced team from a player standpoint than what the Houston Rockets are putting out there. And they finally, in the last 5 minutes of this one, met those expectations.
Yeah, look, 20-6 run over the last 3 minutes and 50 seconds. They did not miss a shot for the final 4 minutes.
Why bother missing them earlier? I never get this. You should always make all the shots.
Buddy, it just matters what you do over the whole 48, man. We're aggregating this thing. So it doesn't matter if you make them all at the end and miss them all at the beginning, as long as you have more points in the end. Look, they were just raining threes down to end the game. And it's actually funny that it works out this way, because we've talked about this with this Nets team, that the way they're constructed, the way that they just have mostly a bunch of like sort of just 3-and-D kind of players. I mean, that's like the primary archetype they have on the squad right now. They are going to sort of live and die by the three. And all NBA teams essentially live and die by the three, but some teams are going to live and die a little bit more. And the Nets are like that, because they have guys who can stretch the court, and they don't have tons of three-level scores. But if you're going to just – they had great looks down the stretch. Mm-hmm. They were clearly, working to get ball movement around to be able to find open shooters, and they went down. And when you're going to be able to do that, that this team can just, they can pile on points quickly. If the shots are going down like this. And like I said, I mean, 4 minutes without missing a shot is, that's a little bit of an outlier, or a lot of bit of an outlier territory, but the Nets, it's not like total luck. Like the Nets are built like this. They have very good 3-point shooters on the team. And you can, when you are built like that, you can go through stretches where you just kind of don't miss. And that's what, you know, brought the full rain here at the end, because they just didn't miss for the last three minutes and 50 seconds, 20-6 run, and away you go.
Everything about those closing sequences was fantastic. You talk about how these were wide open looks, and you could even see the Brooklyn Nets collectively as a team were hunting for those perimeter shots. Spencer Dinwiddie inside of this collection of triples that go down. He gets one kind of on a pass. He's cutting underneath the basket across the baseline. It's not like he had an easy look around the rim, but he wasn't even thinking about it. He went out to the corner, spun himself around, knocked down a triple. Royce had one in there as well. Cam Johnson had a big one. We're going to talk about him coming up. Claxton even on the interior. And to your point, yes, three-pointers matter to almost every team in the league, but specifically for this team, this is how they win games. And we had seen stat lines that really do talk about when the Brooklyn Nets shoot over, I think the number was like even 38%. It wasn't even going that 40-point mark from beyond the arc. They win games. When they don't, they lose games. And that's exactly what this one came down to. Open looks, and you said it early, by the way, Nets might lead, from an internal fan perspective, might lead the league in in-and-out threes, because they had a lot of those in the early portion of this game that could have been the first thing we discussed in a post-game and a potential loss. Instead, it does, as you say, get back to the mean here, where all the ones late fall down and they get the win.
Yeah, look, I know every team is going to think that their team is the one who just kind of gets like unlucky breaks and unlucky bounces. Like, that's just like a dopey fan mantra. I fall for it myself too. I really still also think that the Nets have the most in and out.
And also, it's true for us.
It sure feels like it feels like Harris has a ton of these. Cam Johnson has a ton of these, and even in this game specifically, and maybe this is what happens when you're following a team like this. And that's, I would say, are generally in nail biter territory here right now. We want them to hang on to the sixth seed. We want them to stay out of the play-in tournament. We want them to go in and have a full playoff series just kind of in check. So you are living and dying a little bit more with every single shot, even the early ones when you want them to pull away, when you got these open looks. And the story of the Nets, since the All-Star break, right, which is a nice cutoff for sort of around the trade deadline, the Nets are taking the sixth most threes in the league, 38.6, behind the rest of the teams. The rest are four of these six teams are like, you know, kind of very top of their conferences, right? But they're easily the worst shooting group of that top group. So they're taking a huge amount of threes, but they're not hitting them as efficiently. Okay, that makes a little bit of sense. They don't have overwhelming talent. But like we said before, when you get a hot streak like this, this is what they want to do. It's not just like they pick this one night to start bombing. Like even Royal Ivy, who they talked to at halftime, he's like 23s a half. They've interviewed him multiple times coming out of breaks. This is what they want to do. They're going to pass up other shots to take threes. And when you do that, you get some of the more exciting stretches in basketball if you can pile them all together. And that's what they did. I know we're going to talk about Cam Johnson here. I know we're going to talk about some of these other guys. But it's almost like this last 3.5-minute stretch, to me at least, to both of us, has been like just like the stretch we've been dying for. Yeah. Right? Like we've been like just like waiting for this. We've said this on multiple podcasts. We know they have this in them. And sometimes you just got to wait for it to happen.
And by the way, to tie a bow on it, there's been stretches in other games to the in and out theme that we're talking about. Some of these looks, the look is right. It's there. They're just not going in. Dorian Finney-Smith not coming close to his percentage, right? Spencer Dinwiddie's had his lows. Cam Johnson has struggled in a game when all of a sudden in this little chunk of time, everybody starts hitting them. You can see what they're trying to build, at least in the short term with this team. Coming up here in a second, we'll talk specifically about Cam Johnson and why his game was so effective tonight and why it matters to whatever the Nets want to accomplish in the remainder of this season and the playoffs.
All right, before we get to that, can I tell you about our friends over at Ultimate Pro Basketball GM? You think you can run a team? You're one of those guys or gals out there that's always complaining about how, you know, your favorite team, like maybe the Nets in this case, they don't know what they're doing in the front office. They can't run it. You know how to manage the personalities. You know how to build a roster. You know how to handle the money. Go put it to the test. Ultimate Pro Basketball GM. There's a reason the Locked On group chat went and has been going absolutely bonkers for this game because everyone's in their full competition mode. The game allows you to manage every strategic aspect of the franchise. You play through seasons, you lead the franchise, the fans to glory. You can build a historic dynasty. It's a simulation. You're responsible. You deal with the challenges of the personalities of the players and coaches. You hire the right coaches and assistants. It's not just the players here, folks. You trade and train players. You make draft picks. You navigate every piece of the franchise. Ultimate Pro Basketball GM is where it's at. If you think you can put all the pieces of an NBA team together right now, Locked On Nets listeners get 100% free boost to their franchise when using the promo code Locked On in the game store. Make sure to check it out. Download the game. Just visit probasketballgm.com. Scan the code or look it up in the app stores. That's probasketballgm.com. Ultimate Basketball GM. Start your dynasty today.
Okay. So let's talk about the key players that really made this game roll. Mikal Bridges, this is kind of becomes the theme when we've talked before about in the previous iteration of this roster. The Kevin Durant games, the Kyrie Irving games were always just like, well, that's what you expect. And then who else is going to contribute? I think Mikal Bridges across his 40 minutes and 27-point performance hits that category. Great bounce-back game for Spencer Dinwiddie, who had an offer in the last one, comes out 8 of 10 in his 35 minutes, gives you 10 rebounds, just 2 assists, leaned into the scoring bag in this one. Oh, sorry, 11 assists in this one. I was reading Nicholas Claxton's stat line, which was insane. Why would I think Spencer Dinwiddie had 10 rebounds? We're fine, guys. I'm just happy they won. 8 of 11 from the field for Dinwiddie, the 11 assists. So he gets the double-double in his 20 points. But to me, Doug, Cam Johnson, 36 minutes, 11 of 18. He ends up taking the most shots on the team, which you can say is a little out of order, unless he's going 5 of 9 from beyond the arc. He's getting to the line 4 times, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 31 points tonight, led the Nets. And the style of his game, being willing to, for every triple he took early, he was also driving at the basket. When Spencer Dinwiddie was pushing the break, it was Cam Johnson who was filling the lane as that space opened up when you were dragging guys out to the perimeter. He is one of the more athletic weapons they have on this team. It's pretty critical for him to do the both and not treat himself like a Seth Curry, like a Joe Harris, a guy that's going to live on the perimeter and wait for those looks to come.
Yeah, look, he hasn't really kind of spiked a game here for a while. The last one where he really went off is all the way back at the beginning of the month against the Knicks, and that was a loss. He dropped 33, but they got smoked by the Knicks, so I'm not even sure we can totally count that one. This is easily his best game in a win as a Net, we'll call it that, and just maybe probably his best game overall. 5 for 9 from three, took 18 shots overall. The key to guys like this, as with like any real 3-and-D guys, if you can attack closeouts, right? Like, so if you can attack closeouts because you're kind of a sniper from beyond the arc, then it makes it very, very tough on defenses. It's why a lot of like 3-and-D wings mostly are just kind of corner standers, right? Because either the shot's going to be there, or they're just going to, you know, relieve themselves of the ball, and like and that's going to be it. But when you were able to attack a closeout, put the ball on the deck and try to get to the rim too, like that's sort of the next evolution for a scorer. Cam is not all the way there in terms of like being able to do it really consistently, but this game he was. And if he's going to be able to play like this, he's not going to shoot 5 for 9 and 11 for 18 every game from the field, but if it can be just slightly, you know, 15 to 20% more consistent along these lines with his scoring, it does sort of turn the Nets into a slightly different team, right? Because they're desperate for this third guy. Like, they're desperate for a third guy that can score after Mikal and after Spencer. And he hasn't been able to show it consistently, but this game, like I said, this is the kind of game for Cameron Johnson where you do start really dreaming about the upside. Free agent going into the offseason. It's going to be an interesting decision for the Nets, but these are the kind of games you're like, right. Like, there is another gear for this guy. And when he hits it, the Nets are a very dangerous team.
And that's funny, too, because the last couple of episodes, Doug did the great one talking about Ben Simmons and being shut down for the year. And then yesterday's episode, which is still a good one to go listen to, me flying solo. It's always good to listen to me talk, was about guys on this roster and expectations for these last 7 games, right? What can we learn? What can these guys prove? Certain guys like Mikal Bridges, Spencer Dinwiddie, Nicholas Claxton, they've all checked the boxes already, either before the trade or after. But Cam Johnson, a guy that thinks he is going to be worth $20 million on a contract, when I went back and looked at the recent games, you can go back to the Miami game when they absolutely blow him out, right? the 9 of 13. That's a really high percentage, the 5 of 8 from beyond the arc. But I actually even went back to the Cleveland game, I think is the one that I got to, the 34 minutes, 4 of 11 from the field. You want that to be a little bit better. But he was 50 from beyond the arc on 4 attempts there, 16 points. I think to your point, like, he needs to be closer to a 20-point performer on a consistent basis than a 15 in this current iteration of the roster. You need to be able to take some of the pressure off of Spencer Dinwiddie to feel like he's the guy that needs to go and attack on closeouts, because he certainly is the more athletic of the two. And comparatively to, say, two very different players, but Dorian Finney-Smith, you mentioned attacking the closeouts, it's what Dorian can't do, even if they were closing him out, which they're not because he's not knocking down the perimeter shot. But that balance of the threat doesn't exist with him. And it doesn't exist with a lot of players on this team capable of saying, if the defense is doing X, I respond with Y, and it opens up all of these other avenues for us to have success. When Cam is doing that successfully, tonight it was about him, his scoring, with how he was able to impact the game. But I mentioned the 5 assists. That tells you the world where now he starts to have a gravity for the other team's defense, and then other perimeter looks, other cuts, other bigs, Claxton, whether it's going to be him, whether it's going to be a De'Ron Sharp, it opens up easy opportunities for others. So it has to be something very close to this, just in terms of the balanced attacking performance to go along with what we know he is capable of on the defensive end as well.
Yeah, look, we talked about it in previous episodes. Ball movement for a lot of teams, and especially the Nets, is predicated on beating your primary defender, right? It's not just on being unselfish and passing more. I think people tend to think like they get it in their head. It's like, we got to throw more passes. You can throw infinity passes and it won't be ball movement, right?
It's called like college basketball.
Exactly. Like, we can do four corners. Nothing will ever happen. They can, right. You know, they can get 50 passes in a possession. It's just not going to, it's not going to work. Ball movement is predicated on, you know, either extreme screen setting or actually in conjunction, lots of screens and beating your primary defender so that someone has to come and help. If you have the more guys you have that can do that on a consistent basis, the more that things are going to open up. The Nets often have not had guys that can do this. Now, look, Houston's a really bad defense, second worst defensive efficiency in the league. So it's not like they're not playing, you know, bad boy Pistons here, right? Like, so, but this is what we can, this is where you can, like I said, you can start dreaming on it, because if he is able to do this kind of thing, this is why the assist numbers jump a little bit. This is why the looks get a little cleaner, and why it looks like they're moving the ball in just like I said, in a crisper fashion, because they're able to beat those primary guys. So we're going to, as for the umpteenth podcast in a row, Cam Johnson is going to be a long discussion that we have this year. I think this will be, it will be a really interesting debate around like where the money really ends up landing on him, because he's a guy every team needs. And it's so funny. He's a guy every single team needs. And he's like the guy that you can always get yourself in a little bit of trouble if you overpay this kind of guy. Unless they can do the next thing, right? Like, you're not worried about a guy like Bridges like that now, but Johnson, when you see games like this, you're like, okay, this is in his bag. Like, if it stays in his bag, he's worth a lot more. That's kind of cut and dry along those lines.
And it's funny too, because if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan, you can look at it and say, well, Joe Harris making $18 million. You know, if you want to massage your mind around it, think about paying maybe a couple extra million to Cam Johnson and having that player with that extra possibility of skill set and impact over a player like Joe Harris, whose value becomes very much mitigated as this roster is currently constructed. Coming up here in a second, we'll talk about the other thing that happened tonight, which was the Knicks playing the Miami Heat and why this win mattered that much more. And then even discuss too, to me, still some things that I question, which includes Seth Curry minutes, what exactly went on with Nicholas Claxton and Sengun, which was a difficult matchup. But ultimately, a little bit of resolve here where the Brooklyn Nets were able to, I think, lean on some veteran experience to get this win.
All right, before we get into that, I'll tell you about our friends over on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, FanDuel is giving new customers a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. To sign up today, you're going to claim that no sweat first bet. You can get all kinds of bets here over on FanDuel. It's kind of ridiculous. The list is way too long to ever read it, all the ways it gets granular. If you want to same game parlay it, where you pile a bunch of different stuff together from the same game, like points, rebounds, assists for individual players, first basket scored, if you want to know sort of right away, if you're kind of one and done into this thing, FanDuel's got it all there for you. Maybe you're looking a little bit longer futures. They got right now Jokic and Embiid locked at +125 each. each in that MVP debate, although Giannis had a massive, massive game tonight. So it's going to be interesting to see if those numbers climb up a little bit. MLB right around the corner too. You might be listening to this. It'll be opening day. And MLB FanDuel Sportsbook's got you covered for it all. Don't miss your shot at a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel.
Okay, so the Brooklyn Nets do win this game, and I don't think that it needs to be a situation where we don't talk a little bit about some of the things that were frustrating, specifically for me from Jacque Vaughn and the personnel. Now, that being the case, the most important thing before we get into the nuts and bolts of some stuff we were frustrated by, maybe. If the Nets had lost this game, we'd probably be screaming about other things that happened in this game. But the Knicks and the Heat played one another, and the Knicks won. And it's not often as a Nets fan you think, yes, the New York Knicks won a game. But I talked about this last episode. We've been talking about it nonstop. When you looked in the standings, you understood what was on the line here for Brooklyn every single game down the stretch. That win in what seems to be the Miami Heat star fading and burning out in the atmosphere now puts the Nets a game and a half up, sitting inside that sixth seed. They are 2.5 back from the Knicks, and that doesn't matter. If we talk about the premise that we believe this team is on, winning basketball games, securing a playoff seed, not a play-in seed, this game tonight, the win against Houston, combined with the Knicks beating Miami, is about as critical of a combination as you could have had, only having six games left to play on the schedule. A game and a half is a pretty significant cushion when you only have a few games left to go.
Yeah, this is really getting interesting. Like you said at the beginning, we might have to save some of this other like extracurricular stuff for the Nets for next game or next podcast too, because we got a day off.
There's
on
always
Friday
time before. To critique. There's always time.
Oh yeah, yeah, buddy. We'll find plenty of time to critique this stuff. But this is the kind of time of the year where you are scoreboard watching, or you know, just put it on the other screen depending on what your setup is, and you're watching other games. And when it comes to the Eastern Conference, for a lot of these teams, it's not going to matter, but the Knicks and Miami really matters. Now, the Nets do own the tiebreaker there. They won the season series against Miami, so they do own the tiebreaker. So they can even just tie in record, and they're going to be still above Miami. That's critical because they're two up in the loss column right now. Miami's yep. dropped three in a row. Maybe the Nets broke them there. But like the situation with where this lands is like the Nets are actually this night was really important. Like it's weird to think about this as like such a huge leverage night to go up two in the loss column. Plus you own the tiebreaker against this team. Like they are set up pretty nicely. The Nets schedule is not that difficult here. So when you say, are we often rooting for the Knicks? Obviously not. That's just, you know, it's just an annoying rooting situation when it's cross town and they're always compared to each other. But this tonight was so obvious. Like you have to root for them. Like if you're trying to stay out of the play-in game to win, Miami loss, own the tiebreaker. This is a really, really good spot for the Nets. And if the Heat are stumbling a little bit right now, I mean, could we not sweat this out for like the end of the season? Is there a way we're not right. sweating it out to the last game of the season? I would appreciate knowing this before the last night is what I'm saying.
It wouldn't hurt. And there was, you know, everyone was saying this over on social media. Who are we rooting for? Knicks or Heat? And I was like, this is a non-question. You're rooting for the Knicks, like whatever. You don't have to say it out loud, but in your heart of hearts, everyone knew what you wanted to have happen here. To your point, I don't want to have to live and die by this. And if we clump these last three games together, the Heat, Orlando, obviously disgusting, disappointing loss, and you pull this one out, guess what? You won two out of three, and one of those two wins was against Miami. That's really all that ended up mattering now that you've won two of the other two games, you know, in and around that three-game sample size. And
well, hold on, and real quick, just to interrupt you, don't forget, it is one of these things you forget so easily. I mean, remember 4 games ago was that complete heartbreaker against Cleveland. Like the one where they had the game won. So I want to lump that game in there because it's a 4-game stretch that's been a complete and utter roller coaster, because that Cleveland game was all but won by the Nets. Yeah. And look, short memories around this parts, which is always good to remember after a loss that you're usually not going to remember it for too long. But that it's really, to me, it's a 4-game stretch. Sorry to interrupt you, though.
But no. But it's a good point because, and again, I think that's the theme about this team, right? This could have been, this was a nail biter for all intents and purposes against the Rockets tonight. It could have been a nail biter that they lost. That Cleveland game could have been a nail biter that they won. And had that been the case, we could be sitting here, even having lost maybe to Houston tonight, talking about beat Cleveland, beat Miami, we're X in the standings, maybe we're a game closer, whatever happens. Like, And it's true. It's been the theme covering the Nets and discussing them every single year, and it seems like they're going to carry that over. Game to game, you have to ride with it's an NBA basketball game. I'm not going to sit here and be judgmental about the fact that it took until the final 3.5 minutes for Brooklyn to put away Houston. Like, you won the game. And, you know, next season, when we reflect back on how the Nets finish down the stretch, I'm going to look in the standings. I'm going to see 123-160 and say, yeah, they took care of Houston late in the season. That was a good one. And not necessarily dial in on, well, it could have been X, it could have been Y. And just to give the last tip of the cap, we'll save the critique for maybe tomorrow's episode, obviously, because I'll have the game off, a day off before the Friday night against the Atlanta Hawks, is that this is a matchup with Sengun that's a difficult one. The guy is just the right combination of athletic enough with enough size to be a problem for the Brooklyn Nets and a lot of teams. And I just do tip my cap to Nicholas Claxton, who was basically charged with a very difficult assignment. And while he came up failing in a lot of those instances, the sheer fact that you didn't use a lot of De'Ron Sharpe in this game, you had to live with the results because of what he was giving you, 10 rebounds, the offensive end, the game was there for nice stretches as well. Like, sometimes a part of the battle is keeping yourself in the game to be able to battle. And I know that can look bad when Sengun is beating you in and around the basket and he's grabbing second chance rebounds and you're getting frustrated. But that's a nice part of Claxton's game where it's, yeah, listen, I need to be able to keep my cool enough so that I can still punish them on the other end, that I can grab a couple of critical rebounds, that I can be there to have some blocks on the switches, be out on the perimeter to defend against some of those assignments as well. So while it was not perfect by any stretch, I'm still taking it as a win for Claxton because he was on the court to be able to do what he could.
Yeah, like 18 and 10, they had some really key critical defensive stops there at the end. The Nets got a little probably bailed out with the whistle. I know no one ever wants to hear that about their own team. They definitely had some calls go their way late. I think like around the interior, specifically with Sengun and the fouling. Claxton ends up as a +6 in this game. A lot of that's predicated on the 20-6 final run where they're raining threes. And so it's like, you know, plus minus can get a little tricky when it comes to that. But I agree with you. Like, the key to the Nets being able to hang in games like this, Claxton has to be really good. He's really their only rim protector. It wasn't all great defensively in this game. They really struggled with the switches on some of these guards, and Houston did get some probably a little lucky shots where the Nets had good defensive stands and the ball was sort of heaved in, but they also had a bunch of mid-range things that went in as well. Look, nothing but praise for me for Claxton. It's been, he's second best player in the Nets this season. Probably you have to say Bridges first and Claxton second or something like that. It's really interesting what's kind of like developed for him over the course of the season. But overall, yeah, like not perfect, but he's critical to, they really have no chance. Like, he has to be good. He has to be very good, really, for them to be even in games. He's really their, like I said, their only last line of defense when it comes to even rim protection or on the switches. Overall, really, really good stuff. Look, there's a lot to talk about here. There's another dissection of sort of where the Nets playoff stuff is. We're going to roll through some of the schedule stuff. The Miami thing is definitely a really interesting loss. I think we can a little bit of a breathe easy moment with the Miami piece.
At least until Friday.
What's that?
At least until the next game, right? Until the Nets lose their next game and Miami wins.
Why you buy
yourself
one, baby? Yeah, you buy yourself some breathing room so you can feel a little bit better about it. Okay. We are going to get out of here. Appreciate everyone that jumped in to YouTube. I'm not sure how much we're going to stay after for live YouTube tonight, but we will be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball. Make sure you subscribe over on Locked On Nets YouTube as we climb towards 6,000. Adam showing off his Goonie shirt for reasons unknown. Make sure you subscribe over on Locked On Nets YouTube.
Because Goonies never say die.
Some of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.